Dude, one time I was on a sales call with this dude. Had a great call. Like he was hitting all the green flags, and it gets to the process question, you know, right before I'm about to drop my prices. And during that, he's like, "All right, so what's your process?" And I was like, "Well, first, you know, send me access to Klaviyo. I'll do an audit, blah, 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 all this stuff." And he goes, "Oh, nope, that's a non-starter. We don't let anyone into our back end." And I'm like, "Dude, what? How do you expect me to give you an audit, to write emails, and to make your email marketing strategy better if I can't see anything inside of Klaviyo? Like, yeah,
So
kind
that client didn't land.
No. I was like, all right, brother. See ya. Good luck.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Persuasion Play Podcast. My name is Jeffrey Thomas from Goldmine.Marketing. Persuasion Play Podcast and Goldmine.Marketing covers persuasion, motivation, mindset, and how your brain and the brains around you are influenced. Today, I would like to welcome John Brandt. For the last 4 years, John has been a freelance copywriter. He works in the health and supplement niche, however you want to say it, as well as the copy chief at the Podcast Factory. John's helped grow a business from a middling six-figure brand past seven figures, generating at least $100,000 monthly revenue from email for over 24 months straight. Recently, John's added a VIP sequence that has generated an additional $92,000 in just 86 days. We'll have to get the story on that one. John has also written a product launch book after launching a couple successful $100,000 products. So we'll get the details on that too. I first met John during the pandemic. We worked together writing promos and bullets for groundbreaking podcasts about business, health, accounting, marketing, relationships, and more. And I'm super thrilled to have John on the show today. I recently reconnected with John and saw his rise in the direct response world. So, John, let's have a conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thanks for the invite, brother. Excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. What are you up to today? How'd you spend your Labor Day weekend or the summer?
Yeah, so I was at a Burning Man, and I went to kind of went off the rails. I'm just kidding. I wasn't there.
Okay.
I was
I was like,
actually,
what? This whole totally new conversation.
I'm still stranded there if you can't tell.
Yeah.
No, I had a kind of laid back Labor Day weekend. I had a black tie wedding that I went to at a bougie country club. So that was kind of cool. Celebrating one of my family friends for, you know, probably 2 decades now. He actually has he has his own business somewhere down in Atlanta and is crushing it in the video marketing space. I'm not entirely sure. Our relationship isn't super close. But yeah, that's how I spent my Labor Day weekend, just kind of kicking back, enjoying some cocktails at a black tie event, and you know, getting some Z's.
That sounds great. Where are you located now?
I am still in the beautiful Ohio. Right now we have a terrible weather day, but it's we you know, we had some nice sun. We had some terrible storms. We had the East Palestine disaster, which I'm pretty close to. So, you know, writing in the health and wellness supplement, you know, it's good to live kind of where the stuff is going down. That's, you know, poisoning all our food and
Yeah,
water.
that's wild.
Yeah.
You good email fodder, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, it was good to eat my fodder.
Yeah, right on.
Everything's
How
a
did you get here?
story.
How did you get into copywriting? Tell us a little bit about your backstory. You used to play bass for a touring band. What's that about?
Yeah. So I was you know, kind of like most 20 somethings, I was lost, didn't know what I wanted to do in life. I, you know, played football in high school. I really didn't like it at all. And so I knew that wasn't in my plans for college. Right after football season ended, I taught myself bass guitar from learning nothing. And honestly, the biggest lesson from that experience is that unlike music school kids who like sit in class and learn the theory and read sheet music and all this stuff, I did the complete opposite approach. I just dove head in, started playing with people, and it helped a ton. And I ended up playing, you know, over 500 shows, I think, in a 4-year stretch. I recently played a show about a year ago, which is like the first one in 5 years. So it was like a fun kind of, you know, kind of little side hobby. But that really kind of taught me my first lesson that, you know, just doing stuff yourself instead of reading and, you know, going through all the theory. That's how you really are going to get the most experience. From there, I went to college, majored in music technology, which I realized I hated. Switched to marketing. I realized I also hated that. My marketing professor got fired from her job at like Old Navy, and that's how she became a professor. And I was like, something's up. And then one day, at this time, I was like super interested in politics for whatever reason. I'm not at all anymore, but I was then. And I was listening to this show called The Tom Woods Show. It's a libertarian podcast. And Tom Woods had on this guy named Ben Settle. And I was walking from one class all the way across campus. It was probably like 15 degrees. It was snowy. I was miserable. It was a good 15, 20 minute walk across campus to this economics class that ended up failing out of because my computer froze and I just walked out and dropped out after that. But when I was listening to Ben Settle talk on this podcast, I was like, oh, wait, so you could just write emails for people and make money. That sounds interesting. Maybe I should do this instead of, you know, just sitting around in college, you know, failing out of classes. And so that really kind of started, you know, my interest. I piqued my interest in writing emails. I was on Ben's list for probably 3 years before I became an emails player subscriber. But during that time, Tom Woods also had this, he was advertising this school called Praxis. And what Praxis was they, their pitch was, it was like 12K at the time. It was a 6 month boot camp. And they said, you know, by the end of the boot camp, you'll have the soft skills you'll need to land your first, you know, big boy job. And we'll also help you land your first internship with a company. So that's kind of how I got into this world. I ended up working for this design agency. I was on the marketing team. I was doing all sorts of stuff. I was writing emails, but I was doing all the other stuff that I realized I hated to do. And so after, I think it was like 3 years, I was like, you know what, I just got to try this freelancing thing. And fast forward to today, and now we're here. So that's kind of the journey that I've been on.
The Praxis course, it's was like a marketing focused.
Honestly, it yes and no. Like, it was very tech and like developer heavy too, but it was also very sales heavy. And I was always scared of sales. I don't know why. I just wasn't comfortable. I wouldn't say I'm more introverted, but I kind of have more introverted tendencies, I guess. I don't really know what my personality type is, but sales always just seems scary for no reason in particular. And honestly, I think that's like, sales is a great career choice. Like, if you don't know what to do, like, you could apply the, you know, your sales skills to almost any kind of industry, any niche that you want. And then it also has a direct tie into marketing. But yeah, I was just always, you know, super scared of sales. And so I went the marketing route and had to learn sales the hard way when I started my business.
Yeah, sure. Have you taken any other courses beyond that? Like copywriting courses? Something from gurus or anything?
Yeah. I've gone through, I don't even know the names of them, to be honest. Like, I, you know, with copywriting, at the beginning, I read all the normal books, the Baran Letters, Dan Kennedy, Russell Brunson, all that stuff. I really, you know, resonated with Ben Settle stuff. I've been an email player subscriber for years. I've bought multiple books of his, which are just courses, but he puts it in book format to make it harder for you to actually go through it, so you actually implement it. And so, you know, with all that stuff, like, it's the same thing with, you know, picking up the bass and just kind of doing my own thing. Like, it's better to get experience, because you could get into your head and too much with all the theory and all the information you think you need to know. You're probably never ready to start until you just start. And then you get feedback and you realize how bad you sucked. And then, but it makes it so much easier to improve. When it's all in your head, you can't really, like, not only can you not see how good you are, but, you know, you think you're better than you are because the books make it seem a little bit easier than it is.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a big email players subscriber. I got a bunch of Ben's books as well. I'm a fan. And so today, in addition to the podcast factory, well, you're there as a copy chief. You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. The podcast factory is, you know, it's an awesome way to really get, you know, pretty good at writing copy, because it, you know, it stretches you in different ways, because, you know, there's all sorts of clients there, from relationships and dating to business to fitness to, you know, real estate investing. So there's a whole list of different niches and industries I don't really get to play with. So it's fun to kind of stretch my copywriting muscles that way if I'm writing show notes, but then reviewing show notes. And honestly, that's one of the things I think that has made the biggest impact in my writing career, is not only receiving feedback, but also giving feedback. Because when you give feedback, and it's so hard to do it to your own copy. You can try to do it, and you could use things like Hemingway or Grammarly, and make it sound more robotic in a lot of ways. But when you're looking at someone else's copy, you're not attached to it at all. And it just helps you think about, different things, within the copy that you wouldn't necessarily think about. And then those kind of apply to when you're writing by yourself. So, being a freelancer, there's some of my clients who, they'll give my emails a one over before we send it out, just to make sure the information's right, if there's anything they want to change. But they're not copywriters, so they're not giving you that information. So the Podcast Factory, helped me get feedback from actual copywriters and then dish it out as well, which, both of those things have dramatically improved my copy chops.
Earlier, you mentioned off recording that it's kind of a shortcut or a cheat code to really improving.
No, yeah, getting your copy reviewed, and especially reviewing copy, is such a cheat code, just because it makes you think about it in a different way. It's almost like using a different part of your brain. When you're writing, it's kind of mechanical, and when you're reading it, it's kind of more creative, if that makes sense.
Interesting. I think a lot of writers might say the other, but I definitely understand what you're saying. Like, when I'm putting words on the page, it's like, all right, what specific tactic or word can I deploy here that's going to have a bigger impact than just writing? Right. It's very much mechanical, but not in a ChatGPT sort of way.
No, sir.
Yeah. And then, so in addition to that, you're also freelance in health and wellness. Tell us a little bit about that. Is it just email?
I did, man. When I started, I was doing everything for everyone. Like, at one point, this is probably like maybe 3 months into my freelancing journey, I don't know the exact numbers, but I had something like 9 to 12 clients, I would say. And I was bringing in maybe $4,000 a month. So I was just working on so many different projects, whether it was product descriptions. There's one dude, and I regret this, but he wanted a bunch of fake reviews for this shitty product, and I did that. But really, at the beginning, I was just, bouncing from tab to tab, from screen to screen on my laptop, like trying to just manage it all. And then, a couple of years ago, what I did was I really got serious about my offer, which is copywriting. And then there's sometimes that, or email copywriting, I should say, there's some instances where, a client will want some kind of sales letter or VSL type thing, which, then I will do that. But really, I lead with the email thing. I don't do anything else. And what that does is it kind of boosts my positioning, even within my own mind, because, when you're the guy who's doing everything for everyone, you might as well just be on Fiverr or Upwork. When you have an offer and you have results and you're confident in your abilities, then, you can just charge more. And when you charge more, the clients complain less. You have to deal with a much smaller client roster, and 9 times out of 10, those clients get better results anyway. So it's kind of like a win-win-win on all those fronts.
So how did you first find those 9 clients a month, or how do you find clients now? Like, what's your...
Yeah, totally different. It's a totally different thing. So when I first started, I had quit my job, and I was making, around $4,000 a month, I think. So when I quit, I had one partial paycheck and I had no clients lined up. And so what I did, I didn't have really much of a budget to spend on anything. And so I just used Google and like Hunter.io and like a Google spreadsheet. And I would just go meticulously through each Google result, every single one, until I expired all 30, 50 pages or whatever. And I would use Hunter.io to get their email. And then I would just, start add them to the spreadsheet, and I use this software called Streak, which was a free kind of cold email software that merged with your Gmail. It was a pretty cool tool, but it there was no automation features at all. So it was very time consuming. So that's really how I found all those clients. Like, I have way more clients then than I do now. Making way more now than I was then, because I figured out some other stuff. But I was actually pretty good at finding clients and getting on calls with them and closing them. But the thing was, what happened at some point is we're probably about, I would say, in the 3 to 6 month range of me starting my freelance business. I had a couple great months. Like there was some, 1 month I made like 8 or 9K, a 7K month, then a 3K month. You know, so it was very up and down. But at one point I had so many clients and such a big workload that I just stopped doing any sort of lead gen at all for months. It was like 2-3 months. And that didn't come back to haunt me until 4, 5, 6 months down the road, when all of a sudden I don't have any leads lined up and I'm making like 3 or 4K a month. And I'm like, oh shit, how am I going to get all of this? You know, how am I going to find new clients now? It takes me 20 hours a week to, you know, do this. And I don't have those 20 hours. That's when I had a call with my mentor. He mentioned that I should, you know, just buy a list off Fiverr and do that. So I started doing that. Then I hired a VA. Today I use a lead gen agency, so it's completely hands off. I probably spend not even 1 hour a week on lead gen. And the lead gen that I'm doing now for myself, outside of like what the agency does, is it's really kind of like special opportunities. So it's people who, you know, I kind of already, you know, am familiar with a little bit. Maybe they're not necessarily in my niche, and I'm just reaching out to try to start a conversation. I don't need them one way or the other. They'd be a cool client if I got them, but it's not, you know, a super big concern of mine.
I get a lot of cold outreach on Twitter saying, you know, we can get you 20 leads a month or something. Just like, I don't know who you are. I don't, maybe you can, I don't know.
I saw the worst cold Twitter DM the other day.
Yeah, what's that?
Someone reached out to Alexander Cortez, Ajak, on Twitter. He's big in the fitness space. And the opening line was, Alexander, I let you sleep with my wife. And then the next message was like, oh, that was a joke. I don't have one. And it was just, it was so cringy.
I guess it gets attention, right?
It's not the right kind of attention,
though. No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. All right. So you mentioned, or I mentioned in the introduction, that you had a middling six-figure brand that you took past seven figures. What kind of brand was that? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that's a supplement brand. Actually, it was one of the first clients I got. I remember when I first talked to him, and this is like very early in my freelancing career. I wasn't even using Zoom yet. Like it was just a phone call that we had. And I quoted my prices to him at the time. And he kind of gasped because they were so expensive for him at the time. Today, he pays me more than three times that much. So we've both grown together. But what happened with his supplement brand was it's been around for, you know, I think 2002. It came online and started selling online back in the day before me. I think in 2015, this happened. But he was getting a ton of monthly organic visits every month. It was before Google updated their SEO algorithm. You could just kind of stuff keywords in articles, I think, and be ranked really high. And all of a sudden, one day, Google updated their algorithm, and he went from, you know, I would say 200 to 400,000 monthly visitors down to under 20,000. So a massive, massive decrease. And then from there, he was just kind of struggling and couldn't figure out how to make people buy. So when I talked to him, his business was in a bad spot. So this is 2019 to kind of date it. So this is 4 years after the Google SEO algorithm update. And his list at the time was like 100,000 people, I think. And when I sent an email or when I got access to his email software, there was not a single email that got 10% open rates. They were all under 10%. A lot of them were under 5%. And really what I did was I just pretty much got rid of 90% of that list, dwindled it down to 10K, and started re-engaging people and then just building from there. But a lot of like his customer avatar is, you know, 65 plus more often than not. So a lot of those people on that original email list probably passed away, or they stopped using, you know, that email address completely. So, you know, it was a dead list literally. And, you know, I nuked it down to 10K and just started from there, and, you know, just started sending, you know, more consistently, started sending, you know, plain text style emails versus newsletter and design heavy style emails. So they're landing in the inbox more, people are reading them more, people are enjoying reading them. And that's just kind of like today, our engaged list that I send to with that brand, it's between 30 and 35K. So we've regrown a lot of that list that we kind of killed off at the beginning. And what's cool too is some of my emails have attracted attention for him to be interviewed on certain podcasts, you know, which is something that I don't think a lot of people don't realize email can do, because it just kind of raises your positioning when you do it in a way that's, you know, just consistent and good. And so, yeah, he got invited on a bunch of podcasts now. He, you know, just completely changed his business and life around. At one point, he referred to me as the son he never had, and I helped him get out of all his credit card debt. You know, his business went from, you know, barely breaking even to, you know, consistently doing seven figures and hopefully eight figures soon. So that's kind of the story.
That's very cool. And what's that VIP sequence that you added that pulled in a whole bunch more revenue?
Yeah. So this client is in such a unique situation. In his store, he has over 600, maybe over 700 products. Some of those he, you know, produces himself. Some of them he just wholesales. So there's, you know, different revenue splits for each of them. But the VIP sequence, what that is I took, basically I'm targeting the top 20% of the customers that drive 80% of the revenue and sending them a one-off email about kind of every product. So it's been going on for, you know, I think it's 87 days today. It's brought in, I haven't checked it today, but probably over 92,000 since implementing it, but it's only going out to like 3,000 people because I'm only targeting, you know, the top clients. And the way I defined it in Klaviyo, I think it's just, if you had three orders in the last year, then you get entered into this segment, which gets all these emails. And then it's just like a 3-day drip. So there's an email on day one and then day four and then day seven. And that just kind of goes on forever. What's also cool about this, this sequence is I set it up so they can unsubscribe from that specific sequence or, you know, completely, obviously. But I think there's only been one or two people who have unsubscribed from this sequence. So, you know, a lot of people think that you could sending too many emails is a bad thing, but if you have something that can actually help somebody, you know, it's kind of your duty to send them those emails so they know about it. Cause otherwise, you know, the information age that we're in, you know, everyone has short attention spans and they forget everything right after they say it or read it. So, you know, you just got to be consistent. So yeah, that's, it's been pretty successful since I implemented it.
That's really cool. In the supplement world, I think I saw a Wall Street Journal article like 6 months ago or something that FDA was really cracking down on supplements. How do you stay compliant with the FDA? How do you write about supplements without making over the top claims that maybe get you or your employer in trouble? How does that work?
Honestly, I just try to avoid over the top claims as much as possible. To me, when it comes to email marketing, and let's divide it up further. When it comes to plain text email copywriting, because there's two very different styles. There's the plain text, which is what I do, and then there's the design heavy, which I don't do. I'm not a designer. I can't design to save my life, to be honest. But within the plain text kind of subsection, there's kind of two types of copywriters. There's the over the top, super hypey, clickbaity guys. And then there's the more kind of sane voices in the room. And that's kind of how I approach my copy. I'm not making over the top claims. Number one, I think they don't work a lot of the time anyway, because it's if you sound too unbelievable, it doesn't, you know, people aren't going to believe you. Like, I was watching this thing from Mr. Beast. And if you don't know Mr. Beast, he's a popular, I think the most popular YouTuber. And he just, you know, has all these challenges and gives people money and just does all these crazy videos. But I was watching this interview with him. And he said that if he put in his YouTube title, "I'm giving away $1 million," the comments would be flooded with, "Oh, this is, I don't believe this. This is fake. This isn't real money." But if he stuck with 100K instead of $1 million, everyone believed it and thought it was real money. And that just kind of goes to show, like, the believability factor is super important, you know. And then it's just like obvious stuff, like you can't say you're going to cure cancer, you know. You can't make medical claims, which is a big thing. And obviously the FDA, you know, they prefer the pharmaceutical companies, and everyone has seen the commercials where, you know, at the end, it's just a long list of terrible side effects that can happen from it. What I do is just a very different approach. I just, you know, try to be the expert in the room, the sane voice, someone they can trust, because trust, you can't convert someone to buy anything from you without that trust factor. And so, you know, using stories to my benefit and kind of other tricks of the trade, you know, help me avoid, you know, making these over the top claims and still making revenue while I do it.
Yeah, that's pretty sure. Do you have it checked over by a lawyer anyways, or don't even?
I don't have it checked by a lawyer. I don't know if my clients use a lawyer. Really, the another main thing too is, you know, I'm very much in a smaller pond with the clients I'm working with. So we're not necessarily attracting all the attention. Another thing I've done too, like with my one client, with all the vaccine stuff and COVID, is we actually set up another list. So we, you know, asked people on our list to subscribe to another list. And on that list, you know, we get a little bit more liberal with kind of what we say and kind of shock value stuff. So it's an even more kind of pruned version of our list of kind of the people who are already interested in it, you know, just to kind of check our toes and make sure that we're not, you know, attracting the attention of the powers that be.
When you write, you mentioned you use emails and other tricks of the trade. I'm sorry. You mentioned you use stories and other tricks of the trade. Do you use structures like AIDA, PIS?
So when it comes to structures and formulas and stuff like that, like I'm a big Dragon Ball Z fan. And so in Dragon Ball Super, which is like the new series, Goku, the main character, he passed Super Saiyan. He learned something called Ultra Instinct. And what Ultra Instinct is just this state where he doesn't have to think about dodging or attacking. It just kind of happens automatically. And that's very much what I do today. Every email is different. It doesn't necessarily follow a formula. Really, when I fall back on formulas, it's because I can't like think of a good hook or angle to start an email off with, and I'll rely on those. But honestly, I don't spend too much time, you know, thinking about that stuff, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, when you write too formulaic, it becomes, you know, there's that pattern that can kind of become obvious to people and turn them off. And so mixing it up is good on that end. But also, like, when I'm writing copy, you know, one of the things I do is really just, and this might sound kind of lame, but it's like thinking about the other person and how you can actually improve their life. You know, sometimes it's hard to write, or you get writer's block. And a lot of the times when that happens to me, I just think about like the person who's going to be receiving this email and buying the product and using it and getting better results and living a better life from using the product. And it you know, just makes it a lot easier. So I'll use the formulas, you know, if I can't think of anything else, but a lot of the time I'm just kind of going off the dome and, you know, using what I know from my experience of writing to this, you know, set of customers for so long. And yeah, that applies, you know, kind of across the board with my clients.
Very good. I think I read on your website, or maybe I just hallucinated this, but that you like to make your competitors irrelevant. Tell us how you can do that, or how we can do that.
Yeah. So I really, the main thing is consistency. And like a story to kind of showcase this example, this is probably about a year ago with one of my clients. We, you know, we're looking in our email software, and we realized that there was a big segment of our audience that never purchased anything. And so we were like, all right, we're going to force their hand here. And we sent them an email and was like, hey, you know, we noticed you've been on our list for a while. You're not, you haven't bought anything. It costs a little bit of money to kind of keep you in our system. So here's the deal. We'll give you a coupon and buy something now, so we know that, so you know that you want to be here. Otherwise, we're going to delete you. My client got bombarded by emails from his customers saying, please don't delete me. I love reading all the emails. I just, you know, I don't have the money to afford your products, but I love learning from your emails. And so that's the key, is, you know, mixing kind of entertainment and education in a way that makes people feel like they're getting value, even if they don't take the full step and buy the product or the service or, you know, the coaching, whatever it is. And if they get value from it like that, you know, they tend to just enjoy reading the emails, and you can't really say that about a lot of brands. Like I have, I think probably like 120,000 unopened emails in my inbox right now. And it's all because, you know, they didn't form that relationship with me. So really the customer relationship is the most important thing. For me, I would rather strengthen the relationship at the expense of making a short-term sale than vice versa, because what that does is in the long term, it just, you know, puts kerosene on your email efforts.
Yeah, that's very true. Do you think, where do you fall on the line that, and knowing that you like Ben Settle, I probably know your answer, but where do you fall on the line that this email is too long? Do you ever get that from a client of yours?
Yeah, I do. And I kind of understand it. Like Ben would say, you know, it's never too long. It's only too boring. So you just kind of can make it more interesting. But you know, what's interesting about this whole, like, and I mentioned this earlier on the show, the whole short attention span kind of thing that we're going through. What's interesting about that is, yes, we do have short attention spans. Yes, there's TikTok and YouTube shorts and all these stuff that, you know, are quick dopamine hits, but also the longest podcast get consumed the most, whether it's like a Joe Rogan or another one I'm on that's not business related, but it's football related. It's Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce's podcast, which are, you know, probably 90 minutes, but I listen completely through those, you know. And then you have people who, you know, they'll binge an entire series on Netflix in a weekend. So we do have short attention spans, but we also don't. We also kind of like the long stuff. And a lot of the times, you know, when it comes to length, you know, if you need to say more about something in order to get someone to buy, then you need to do that. And the way that my clients operate is, I'm not playing in the supplement space. I'm not with any of the massive players in the game who they could just have a super tease heavy short email with a link that goes to a sales page. My emails go to just a product page. So the sales page doesn't, there's not enough copy on that page to, you know, really take everyone through that whole journey of, you know, deciding to purchase. And so, you know, writing longer copy, you know, helps get your point across. And you got to do it, you know, you can't bore your audience, because like Ben teaches, boredom is the death of the sale.
Right. Yeah. But you have to sell it somewhere. Right. So if the product page isn't selling it, you know, you're there. All right. Could you tell us that story about the sneaky email that earned your clients an additional 20K? Was that the thing that said you have to buy something or we're kicking you off, or was it something else?
No, that email, the buy something or we'll kick you out. That email didn't do great in revenue, but it a lot of people just replied and said that, you know, they just gave us praise. The sneaky email was, we were in the middle of a launch for a product, and honestly, the copy I wrote, you know, it was good. The product is really, you know, the one of the most important things. It's Ben Settle teaches it 40-40-20. 40% is the offer, which in this case is a product. 40% is the list, and then 20% is the copy. So I was definitely in that 20% realm. But yeah, so we're in the middle of this launch, and I get an email from my client. He's like, "We are sold out." And so I just sent up a quick email that we were sold out, but we were still accepting back orders. And that, you know, that tapping into real urgency like that, you know, really made people buy a ton. It created quite the chaotic situation for my client, because he was waiting weeks, you know, for his shipment to come in so he could start delivering them to the customers. And I think it took maybe like 3 or 4 weeks versus a couple days for the customers to actually get the product. But through that time, I just milked that cow over and over again. And, you know, it was super, super successful. So if you could tap into real urgency versus, you know, fake urgency where, you know, it's a Labor Day sale, and then, you know, the day after it's like, oh, it's extended because we didn't make enough sales. People can kind of see that. So, you know, if you could tap into real urgency, it's and real scarcity, you know, there's nothing that that can, you know, boost your revenue more.
All right. That's super cool. That's a good idea. You know, just throwing that out, because people want what they can't have. And even if it means I have to wait longer, yeah, that drives some conversion. That's really cool.
Yep.
Is that one of the 100K stories that about your launches and tell us about those in the book.
Yeah. So the honestly with one of my clients, it's such an awesome situation and something that is, I've been thinking more about it in the broader land of podcasting. So this guy, what he does is same one that I talked about earlier, you know, has a ton of products. So he has his own podcast where, you know, if he's having a launch, if he's launching a new product, and sometimes it's suppliers and they just want to talk about, you know, one of their products that, you know, maybe we don't talk about enough. And so I kind of treat that as a launch too. But usually what happens from his end is he records a podcast with, you know, the supplier of the main product or whatever. And in that podcast, I will listen to it. I will, you know, write bullets for every interesting point. And some, like, I'm writing bullets in a notebook. And one of the recent podcasts I did for him, I had, I think, like 50 or 60 bullets from a 60 minute conversation, just an incredible amount. And a lot of these bullets are product specific. And so if they're talking about a specific product, you could just link to it in the bullet, you know, and those emails usually kick off the product launch thing. And they always do well. And then not only that, is there just this massive bullet heavy email, but there's so many stories inside those podcast episodes that I can repurpose for emails and just give kind of more, just, you know, give more emphasis to them inside the email. So it'll start with a podcast and kind of list the whole thing and link to a product if it makes sense in a bullet. And then from there, it's just taking the most interesting stories from those bullets and turning those into emails. So it's kind of easy on my part because everything's kind of done for me, but I know that there's a lot of brands out there. There's a lot of podcasts out there. If, you know, if you're working for a client who's interviewed on a podcast, listen to that, because they're going to have stories that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be, you know, more emotional and have kind of more juice to them than, you know, just a review story or a testimonial. So, you know, podcasts are, you know, the one of the best research tools for, especially if you're working with new clients and, you know, even if someone has a podcast, you know, reaching out and offering to write their bullets, you know, it's a good way to land a client if, you know, you're not good at what you're, or you're not, you know, positioned and, you know, confident in your abilities.
You have a book coming out then about position or about product launches. Yeah.
No, the book is out. The book is out. It's on Amazon. You can get it for free though on my website. What's cool about the book, so the whole first half of it, because I want to say it's like, it's probably around 260 pages, and it's written in a very direct response way. So it's not that many words, as many pages as it is, if that makes sense. Sure. Because I'm using, you know, there's a lot of just single sentence paragraphs in there. But the whole first half is all about kind of my philosophy with email and how I approach it. A lot of it's very inspired by Ben Settle. There's some parts that, you know, that aren't. And actually, that reminds me of something I meant to mention earlier. One of the traps I fell into when I was first starting and I was just fully indoctrinated in Ben Settle is that my style, it was just kind of like a worse version of Ben's. And, you know, it was very Ben influenced. And you could tell from reading. I look back at copy I written in that time and I cringe because I'm like, I shouldn't have, you know, tried so hard. They say imitation is the greatest form of flattery, but it's also the quickest way to, you know, make you look like you don't actually know what you're doing and you're just regurgitating what Ben said in a not as good way. And so that's the one thing for if you're like a new copywriter to be mindful of, is that you need to start to develop your own style. And over time I it's hard to like put words onto what my style is, but I write a daily email. I'm like 447 days deep into it, I think. So that gives me an opportunity to, you know, really hone my style. My style personally is a little bit different than what I do for clients. I'm a little bit more aggressive and, you know, you know, just a little bit, you know, more edgy with my own stuff than I am for clients. But, you know, just getting those repetitions in is the best way to make your own style. And I could see the transition from, you know, being super indoctrinated by Ben into, you know, using still some of the stuff that he does, but merging it and finding my own voice within it, which I, you know, it makes me enjoy reading my copy, which I think, you know, yes, you want your copy to convert and make conversions and, you know, make your clients revenue or make you revenue. But if you could just read your copy and enjoy it, then that's also a good sign that you're moving in the right direction, I think.
That's cool. And do you have any advanced copywriting tips, any psychological secrets that people want to know?
So let me start this with a story about how tactics can go wrong. So there was this company called Tootaloo. I hope it's not a big deal if I mention their name. They made this healthy trail mix, and this stuff was delicious. And I had affiliate relationship with them and a client. So we would send, you know, an email, you know, once every couple months promoting their offer. And their copywriting stuff was dialed in. Like they had a huge sales letter. That was great. The copy that they, you know, let us use or kind of work off of for the affiliate relationship was killer stuff. But I reached out to them like last month. We wanted to do another affiliate promotion for them. And it was just radio silence. And I found out yesterday that they're going out of business. And this is a company that, you know, their product was great. I'm assuming it was like something with their margins, but they also just, I think they relied too much on tactics and stuff like that. So, but beyond that, you know, a cautionary tale first, I think one of the best things is something Jim Clare talks about, and that's the general experience. And this isn't so much a copywriting tip. It's more of a business tip, but having a good general experience is something that sets brands and copywriters apart. From a freelancer side, that means, you know, showing up when you're supposed to, if you're meeting with a client, you know, having that two-lane road of communication open, you know, so that, you know, you're not ghosting your clients and you have a good relationship with them. Like the stuff that makes your clients, you know, refer to you as the son that they never had. But the general experience, and that's also, I take that to copy as well. That's why I'm not a short-term kind of hypey copywriter with the copy that I write. I'm more interested in the long-term relationship. And that means, you know, making the skeleton dance, as Ben Settle would say, saying some of the negative things about the product, because it makes you seem more authentic and honest and genuine. And that's really the best tactic is being genuine and honest. On top of that, you know, there's other stuff you could do. When it comes to email, consistency, you know, really goes a long way. Having a killer offer, like I mentioned, goes a long way. Having a good engaged list goes a long way. But when it comes to specific tactics, I guess the best one I could give is just not being needy. And, you know, that's probably the hardest one to wrap your head around. But when you don't need to make a sale, it's for validation or for revenue or to keep a client relationship, those emails always do better, whether it's the mindset that you go into it with, or it's something else. I don't know, but the anti-needy thing is probably the best tactic I can give.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about, hey, we have this product and you have to have it. You need to come buy it, versus, hey, we've got this product. If you have this problem, we can help you. Click here, you know, and just leave it at that. Like it's part of the relationship that you're building, right? You're not.
Yeah. Like Ben says, you know, giving them an opportunity to buy. I would probably say in 99% of the emails that I've written, the ultimate goal is to make a sale. But I'm not, you know, unless it's during a specific promo and there's a reason to be, you know, to hype up the urgency factor and things like that. Without that, you know, just giving them an opportunity to buy and think differently. Those two things go a long way to building a relationship. And those are two examples that kind of showcase your anti-neediness as well.
Good advice. Hey, what's next for John Brandt?
Yeah. So, it's funny. This I don't know when this is coming out, but I have been quietly or not so quietly working on a course for freelancers, kind of going through the entire my entire journey from, you know, being that freelancer who, you know, was barely scraping by making $3,000 or $4,000 a month to consistently making 10, 12, 15, I think as high as 19 one month per month. And so it's just my whole process. So it's everything from, you know, the lead gen stuff, the cold outreach stuff, if that's how you want to do it. That's what I did. It's the sales script and sales training stuff. It's, you know, figuring out how to improve your offers, making better offers so that you can make more money. It kind of encompasses all of that. So that's something I don't have a deadline for myself, which maybe I should, but I, for the past probably month, I've been working on it, you know, at least an hour a day. Like with the book I wrote, the book took, I think, like 3 months from start to finish. And the reason for that was I was spending an hour every day before I did any client work. And that stuff compounds like interest. And before you know it, you have a finished product. So that's kind of the mindset I'm going there. I might dabble into TikTok, and I haven't downloaded it yet. So that's something that, you know, I'm thinking about. Maybe it's something maybe not want to add, but maybe I'm doing for my own stuff. And then on my to-do list is a fiction book that I don't really know what I want to do with it yet, but it's been on my to-do list. So it's going to come up at some point that I want to just kind of try my hand at fiction. Over the past year, that's probably been the biggest difference with me, is I'm reading a lot of fiction because to tell a quick story. When I bought this fitness program from this company called Mind Pump Media, they have a podcast on YouTube. They're great guys. They're all personal trainers and stuff, and their kind of USP is full body workouts. And so instead of, you know, normally when I'm lifting, I would go 4 times a week or 6 times a week. Well, with this, it's only 2 to 3 times a week. But then on your off days, you're doing trigger sessions. So it's just light band work. And the reason is that your muscles still kind of remember that when it's not super active, it's more of a passive way to lift. And that's the same thing with reading, whether it's, you know, there business and copywriting books that also applies. But I've been applying that with fiction as well, and learning some different things about fiction. And fiction is just, you know, it gives you a chance to kind of be more creative. You don't have to necessarily play in the rules of copywriting and, you know, get, you know, it gives you a little bit more freedom. So that's something it's been on my to-do list for a while. It's going to come at some point. I don't know when. I don't even know what the book's about yet, but it's something that I just want to take a stab at and see if it's something I like. Cause you know, you can, in your mind, you think you like stuff or don't like certain stuff, but you never know until you try. So that's what's coming up for me. And then other than that, it's just, you know, continuing to work on copy and hone my skill.
Love that. I'm looking forward to that course. I'm always looking for just additional information on pretty much all of this stuff. So, send it my way and I'll make sure to send it out to the people on my own email list at marketing. How can listeners and business owners and copywriters and whoever is interested find you?
Yeah. So if you go to johnbrandtcopy.com, it's johnbrandtcopy.com. That's my website. You can find, you could sign up for my email list. When you do, you get a free PDF copy of my book. You also get enrolled in my daily emails. It's been like 447 days. I have a ton of blog posts up there as well, which are basically emails that I just, you know, copy and paste it into my website. And yeah, there's more kind of case studies and stuff. The case studies are a little bit outdated. I actually, I'm going to create one for this VIP sequence thing. I think I might give it a little bit more time to kind of pump up the revenue numbers, because it's a multi-month project that, you know, we're like 3 months into right now. But yeah, johnbrandtcopy.com. You can find all that stuff. Sign up for my email list. Send in daily email tips and stories and fun things about what interests me in my life. You know, I'm not one of these gurus who say you can't watch sports or cartoons and things. So a lot of that's in my emails as well.
A little bit of personality and copy.
Yes, sir. Cool.
All right, John, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks everybody for joining us. on the Persuasion Play podcast. You can find archived episodes at goldmine.marketing. You can also sign up for my emails. They used to be daily. They're a little more spaced out these days, but come check it out at goldmine.marketing. This is Jeffrey from Persuasion Play Podcast, where I podcast about persuasion, motivation, mindset, and how your brain and the brains around you are influenced. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.